Thank you, Deb, and thank you, everyone, so much for joining us this bright and early Monday morning. It's really great to see all of you. My talk today is going to be about the exclusive free milk feeding for the very low birth weight in the NICU and how many days it really takes for a mom to pump to provide milk to meet that need. I am now home in Brockport, which is a SUNY system school, and I also hold an appointment at Rush, where I've been for the last 12 years. This is our research team, and they're a wonderful, wonderful group. Dr. Janet Engstrom, Dr. Tricia Johnson, Fabiola Lara, who's our coordinator and breastfeeding peer counselor, Dr. Luke Patel, and Dr. Paula Meyer, who I'm sure many of you know. And most of us are at Rush, although not all. As a disclosure, this funding, this work is part of our larger NIH grant that we have at Rush, and we do have, and I specifically have, previous related funding from ARC and from MEDILA. So to give you a little background on very low birth weight infants, the definition of a very low birth weight infant is an infant weighing less than 1,500 grams at birth. They're 1.5% of all births in the United States, but they represent upwards of 35% of all hospital costs. So they're a very small group, but they're a very expensive group. And as we look at the rollout of many different cost containment measures in healthcare, this is a group where a little can go a long way with a very big price tag attached for just a little bit of savings. For those very low birth weight infants, the primary drivers of that early health care cost is the short-term costs of care, and those primarily come from morbidities. And I chose four, although there are many more, but these are kind of the top four. There's brain injury, which would include interventricular hemorrhage and paraleukomalacia, which I never say correctly, which is about 12% of very low birth weight infants and is at around $10,000 per episode. So it's little things that have big impact. Neck is 7% of our population at Rush at a cost of almost $16,000 per episode. Late onset sepsis is a much larger group of infants, and this is confirmed and diagnosed late onset sepsis. It doesn't include those that are workup sepsis cases. 24% of babies at almost $10,000 per episode, and that's direct cost, so that's just the cost of medical care. It doesn't include the indirects for overhead and other things. And then chronic lung disease, which is 23% and about a little over $35,000 per episode. So we're talking about things that are prevalent and important and are a way where we can focus efforts to address the cost of care for these babies. There's long-term cost implications as well. As we know, in the first year of life, 82% increase in acute care visits for babies that are born very low birth weight and a 25% risk for rehospitalization in that first year of life. And childhood goes on to have continuing complications related to development. There's an increased need for social and educational services, and then there's just higher overall healthcare costs from follow-up and from additional disease or infection burden. So we need to look for therapies that are cheap and effective and widely available, and human milk fits the bill in every way. It lowers the risk for those morbidities. It's something that all mothers who have given birth have the potential to provide, and it is potentially cost effective, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. So what does it take to get human milk? Well, it takes three things. It takes a pump, because these mamas are pump dependent at the time of birth. It takes a kit to collect the milk, and it takes an investment of her time. And that's the one thing that it's really important not to overlook. It's a commitment to be a pump dependent mom, and we need to recognize and celebrate her for making that commitment. There's a lot of barriers to these women. Most insurance companies, although we do have lovely language in the Affordable Care Act, and many states have gone farther about reimbursement and providing access to pumps and supplies, the reality is this mom's writing the check first. And if she's a resource-deprived mother, she might not have $40, $60, $80 a month for a pump. It just is a reality for her. She's also now looking at a preemie. You have to go to the hospital. I don't know about your hospital, but at Rush, it's $25 a day to park. imagine going every single day. And even though we have a discount, we don't charge them $25 a day. Even though it's a discount, when you have a mom who's on WIC and food stamps and housing assistance, where does that money come from? And how does she prioritize seeing my baby or pumping for my baby? And sometimes that's the choice. And insurance doesn't routinely or universally cover pumping and kits. Most hospitals have found ways to vary certain costs, but it's not there and it's not something that is expected. It's kind of acceptable but not required, and we've got to switch the language to required. So if human milk isn't available for that infant, then hospitals have to use an alternative, and their alternatives are donor human milk or formula. A lovely article in the Journal of Human Lactation, the August issue, which is all about NICUs and you should all read, was published by our team that really looked at the acquisition cost of human milk for the hospital. And what we found is that with the exception of the women who don't achieve a daily minimum value of 100 mLs, it is cheaper to invest in her than it is to buy donor milk or formula. And it's not cheaper by a little bit, it's cheaper by a lot. And so there really isn't the excuse that human milk's too expensive, because the data don't support it, and they haven't. It's less expensive the more she's able to produce. It's just a function of supply and volume. And it's feasible in the first month for all women who achieve a minimum of 100 mLs. It actually gets feasible for those women in the lower groups in the later months, but I'll be honest, if you're getting 100 mLs a day or less, many of those women don't last beyond the first month. So the objective of this study was to look to see, well, how many days of pumping would a hospital have to invest in to achieve exclusive human milk feeding during the NICU stay? This is a secondary analysis of our data from the JHL article. We used hospital budgets, infant medical records, and maternal pumping records to put this data together, and these are women who are enrolled in an ongoing prospective cohort study funded by the NIH and specifically by the National Institutes of Nursing Research, and Dr. Paula Myers, the PI. For the cohort study, we had a series of inclusion criteria. They had to be infants that were admitted to our hospital within 24 hours of life so that we could capture all feeds. Their birth weight was less than 1,500 grams, and gestational age was less than 35 weeks. We did require that they started feeding prior to the 14th day of life, that there was no presence of major congenital anomalies or chromosomal disorders, that the infant needed to be in the care of the biological mother, and that there were negative maternal drug screens and HIV screens. Controlled population, but I still feel a generalizable one. For this analysis specifically, we had to include a few more inclusion criteria. One was that we wanted the infants to survive through discharge so that we could see the full exclusive discharge cost, and their pumping records had to be usable. So they had to have 7 days of records so we could really get an idea of what their volume was. They had to provide records prior to the 14th day of life so we could see the initiation period. We had to be able to read them, and 4 people looked at them if we couldn't read them. And they also had to use a definable measurement, so it had to be milliliters or ounces, not some of the creative measurement systems that we had. And they had to contain at least 50% of all of their information, so they had to be reasonably complete. This is the breakout. There are 405 women in this study. 204 did not have available pumping records for the reasons listed. Of the 201 who did have records, we did exclude an additional 44 because their records were not adequate. They either weren't entered at the time of the study or they had other reasons for which they were excluded. So that left us with 157 eligible mothers and their infants. So we looked at 3 basic things. We looked at the amount of human milk that the women pumped on a daily basis, which was the sum of both breasts for every pumping session. We categorized them into specific categories based on their average daily volume, and we looked at 3 scenarios that are common to NICUs, which is the low producer who would produce an average of 250 mLs per day, the average producer, which would be a 500 ml woman, and this is also most experts agree is what a term infant would require, and then the high producers, who are the 750 ml group per day. Average infant intake was then measured for all infants in our study, so the 157. We didn't go back to the larger sample and said, what did they take? And what we found, we looked at their average daily enteral intake for all days during their NICU stay, and we measured for three groups, the all-infant average, those infants born between 750 and 999 grams, who I called the smaller infants, and the larger infants, which was the 1250 to 1500 gram section. We actually have some really great data. There's 34,505 pumping sessions in this data set, of which 94.5% have complete records, so only 5.5% were incomplete in any way, and that could represent one missing session on one day over 180 days of pumping. So I want to tell you that these ladies are very dedicated and very good record keepers. And we did impute missing data using a moving average approach, which you can read about in the first study that this had. So this is primarily descriptive and really looked at forecasting. So we measured their daily and cumulative volume over time, and we compared that cumulative production to the point in time where they would surpass average infant intake for infants as a whole in our NICU, the smaller and the larger group. Just to give you an idea of who these women are, their average age is 29, they're 37% non-Hispanic African American, a quarter of them graduated from college, most receive WIC, and over half had commercial insurance. Ironically, we had a little bit more boys in our sample than girls, 17% are multiple births. The mean birth weight was just over a kilo, 28 weeks was the average gestation, and the mean length of stay for our unit is 72 days, which is consistent with the national average for VLBWs. For our pumping characteristics, 50% of our women pumped to the past the infant's 60-day of life. Rush has a very intense NICU program. We're not really the norm for most hospitals in this country. We could be. We aren't yet. We're going to get there. 30% of our moms pumped to their infant was discharged. Many of them do transition to breast, but they tend to, when they go home, be doing both. The mean number of days pumped was 48 with four sessions per day, 360 mLs per day on average, and 74% of all their enteral feeds over the NICU stay were human milk. And you can see what the infant intake numbers are. So here is the day of pumping and infant intake. You can see that the black line represents the all infant intake. That's the 16,000 mLs. And this is the point in time when a 750, 500, and 250 ml per day average woman would surpass it. And you can see that at 72 days, every single group is able to exclusively human milk feed their infant during the NICU stay. If we break it out into the larger and smaller, which makes me laugh when we talk about preemies, group, again, every single group is able to exclusively breastfeed their larger infant, and every single group is able to exclusively breastfeed their smaller infant. So what we took from this was that exclusive human milk feeding is absolutely possible for women who have very low birth weight infants, regardless of volume in 250, 500, and 750. Those mothers in the lowest group are going to have to pump the entire NICU stay, and many of them, they do reach it 3 days before their infant is discharged, but they do reach it. And hospitals would ensure exclusive human milk feeding with that limited investment in pumps for all mothers, regardless of volume. And I took that a little bit farther because I'm an economist and I was interested to see what it would look like. So if we look at the all-infant intake, it's a three-month pump investment, and I want to give you, that's $90. It's $29, including the insurance, for the hospital when they contract with a company to provide pumps. It's $90, $122.50 if you include the kit. Sepsis was $10,000. For our larger infant intake, it's actually only 2 months, which is okay because these babies tend to go home at 42 days. So that's all they're there for. And for our smaller infant intake, it's again the 3 months, and they tend to go home in about 91 days, so it would fit them. So it doesn't matter, all of them are able. Some of the limitations and implications for our analysis. This is a small set, 157, it's not a big group of women, and we are from a very pro-breastfeeding organization with a lot of support to NICU moms. We do need to look to examine how sustainable the effort is when the mom is facing low volume. And we do find that most of our women continue, some of our low volume women are our most dedicated, but we do need to start looking a little bit at that effort issue. And then we do need further analysis on the cost impact of supporting human milk feeding above and beyond just the pump and the kit. And I want to end by thanking our patients and our staff and our babies. And I have 2 minutes. Yes, Sally.
What portion of the women actually go on to leave the hospital without the pump and breastfeed?
You know, off the top of my head, I would say leave the pump at the completely is probably 10%, but we have a lot of infants who go home with breathing machines and other things, so it's more they're not fully transitioned to breast because they can't be yet for a variety of reasons. So I'd say it's a small number, but it's really because we're good at getting them there.
And if they don't get the pump from the hospital when they need it, okay?
We actually do agreements and rental agreements. We have not yet gone to the it's free language, but we do, you know, the biggest issue is getting it back when they're in a far-flung area and they're 120 miles away. Any other questions? All right. Thank you all very much.